Talk Back with Gary Knoll, Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. I'm video streaming over GaryKnoll.com, and hopefully by next week, this program will be from our new, just-finished major studio. Today, all about health and healing. No guests, no investigative report, but the majority of this hour will be taking calls on the issues you find important. It can be on anything. I'm, of course, going to give you the latest on health and healing during this hour. I'm going to share some insights about how to avoid a catastrophic event that could cause a lot of people to die. Also from Bill Falloon of Life Extension, and also from Kara Michaels, sugar-induced cell aging. It's time people understood that virtually all the sugar you consume impacts your cell. But the good news is, once you stop consuming the sugar, there are many other alternative types of sweeteners you can use that are really non-calorigenic, then you can rebuild your cell. And that's good. I'll share that with you today. And our number to call in throughout the entire hour is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. My voice is just a little hoarse because I've been raising funds for four different non-commercial stations, 2 hours, then an hour, then 2 hours, and an hour. The good news is that the stations are all meeting their goals, and this will be over in about a week, and then we'll get back to regular programming. Let's begin. As you know, a really outstanding diet is one that does not cause inflammation, that is high in fiber, that actually feeds the cells. Every 6.5 minutes or so, the blood goes through your entire body. The purpose of that blood going through is to carry nutrients and oxygen to the cells so there is respiration, your cell can breathe, and to take the byproducts out of the cell, out of the blood, and filter them through the kidneys or through the liver, and then out of the body. In a really well-balanced person, you think about what you want to put in your body and just ask a simple question. Is this something that will help my body or hurt it? And in most cases, for most people in the United States, the majority of what they put in their body actually hurts them. I just counseled a man earlier today who is 72 years of age. He hasn't eaten in his home in about 10 years. Every single meal he goes out to eat, he doesn't like to prepare food. But now he's got all kinds of illnesses. And so I said, what is it you'd like to achieve? And he said, well, at 72, what can I achieve? I said, do you want to be just over these particular conditions? That's not that difficult. Or do you want to be optimally well? He said, what does it mean, optimally well? Well, when in your life were you really healthy and totally fit and energized? He says, in my 40s. I said, okay. Biologically, you can actually reverse your aging process. It'll take about 2 years, but you could knock 15 years off your biological age if you knew what you were doing. And he said, well, if that's true, why doesn't everyone talk about that? Why isn't that news? I said, it depends upon where you're looking. Do you think the average American would give up their comfort foods and their habits and their cultural way of eating to live a longer life? No, they won't. Even when people are faced with the dilemma of dying, they frequently won't give up bad habits. I said, so the information's there. It's been there from a lot of different sources. So I talked to him about where to start. Now, some people can start with a much more rigid diet. But for the average person, I suggest start with a Mediterranean diet. First, because you're not telling a person go all raw, all juicing, all at once. only maybe 5% of a population making a change could handle that. And you don't want the backlash, the blowback, that you don't want someone to start something, not be able to do it, then be angry at you for suggesting it and never revisit it again. Oh, I tried, it doesn't work. So instead, understand better to allow people to make changes that are doable. Now, the Mediterranean diet is doable. Why? Because let's talk about, well, fish. The healthiest fish, of course, would be your smallest fish because it would be the least polluted. And a wild fish, and that would be sardines. And there are not a lot of sardines caught off the coast in the United States, either the Atlantic or Pacific, but it mainly comes from the Mediterranean area. But they're a very small fish, and hence they're loaded with RNA, ribonucleic acid. They are high-end quality protein. And if a person used mustard on them, which mustard is a very powerful healing seed that they make mustard from, that's easy to get in. But let's say someone wanted wild salmon, all right? Wild salmon. So now you're asking him to give up meat and chicken and pork, but instead of them feeling like they're depriving themselves, you're giving them fish. Now, this is for those who can't do it faster or won't do it more complete. We have to always keep in mind that anytime we're dealing with a human being on any issue, it's a curve. Where some people can go right to the top of that curve and do everything, most people can't. So then talk about olives. Do you like olives? How many types of olives do you have? Either green olives, black olives, red olives? And then just the fun of getting different types of olives and different types of olive oil into a person's diet. I sat in a small restaurant. It only had 6 seats. It was in the Italian countryside. It was beautiful. It overlooked the water. It was south of Naples. And my brothers, Howard and Steve and a bunch of buddies, we all went on this trip together over there because I was particularly interested in how people actually live day to day from the time they get up till the time they go to bed in the country. And I wanted to spend a couple weeks just visiting people and talking with them and watching them. And here was a perfect example. There was a big farm, and it was August, and as you're sitting there by the ocean, you could feel the warm breeze off the ocean, but you could also hear the wheat clapping together. It hadn't been cut yet. And if you close your eyes, it just is a mystical type of bucolic environment you're in. And the woman who owned this little restaurant overlooking the ocean, her family owned the land behind it, so she grew her own vegetables. And as an appetizer, she brought out some fresh baked bread, but she also brought out a plate of olives. I'm going to guess there were 20 different types of olives, all of which came from her property. So I asked her about how long does it take to cure your olives, and how do you cure them? Do you cure them with salt, with oil? What do you do? And she went through every single step of this because she'd been doing this as a kid, and I'm going to guess she was in her 60s. And so I was tasting olives I had never tasted before. Now, normally I go downtown to one of the gourmet food stores because they're the ones most likely to have a wide variety of olives. Well, olives are one of nature's most perfect foods. And the more olives you eat, the healthier you're going to be, especially your heart. Your cholesterol is going to be better. Your triglycerides better. Quite simply, if we all ate more olives, we would just be healthier as a people. Then, legumes. Most Americans don't eat legumes. Indians eat legumes. In fact, they're the largest consumers of legumes and pulses in the world, like split pea or a dal soup made from lentils or split pea and different seasonings. It's very easy to cook a legume. It cooks very fast, and you have an enormous variety. You can put tomatoes and onions and garlic in, and you have one type of lentil stew. Or you could put tempeh and potatoes together. There's a lot of variety. So then people think, all right, well, that's not so bad. I could handle some legumes. And then unrefined grains. to start the day. How about some barley or buckwheat? Those are easy to use. Oats, steel-cut oats, very chewy, but make it interesting. Throw in some almonds, some walnuts, some pistachios, raw or their butters, even more beneficial. Put the almond butter, like a teaspoon of almond butter and a teaspoon of walnut butter together in the oatmeal, stir it around. Throw in cinnamon because cinnamon is extremely important as an antioxidant to help trap free radicals in your body, and that saves yourself from being injured or killed. Throw in some flaxseed oil, maybe a teaspoon, and some coconut oil. And that's makes it delicious. Throw in some protein powder. You got yourself some blueberries, raspberries. What a way to start the day. Okay, I can handle that, they say. I can do that. And then you've got seeds, you've got beans, and you can cook the beans in different ways. You can marinate the beans. And then on top of all this, give them lots of garlic and lots of onion. Most people can handle that. And then always finish a meal with a piece of fruit. The best fruit to finish any meal with would be the core of a pineapple. In other words, you take that kind of pithy center of the pineapple. That's the richest source of papain, which is great for digestion, and even have some papaya. Papaya after meal helps everything in the food break down better in the stomach. It's a great digestive aid. But if you have both a piece of papaya and the core of the pineapple, and if it's too strong to eat, then just throw it in a blender, whip it up, and drink it down. Salads galore, sprouts all you want. So a Mediterranean diet is easy for most people, but it is the most successful diet. In fact, when the Japanese diet and the Mediterranean, specifically Greek diet, were measured over a period of years, it was found that the Greek diet allowed people to have the fewest heart attacks, the fewest strokes, kept the blood thin, the bad cholesterol down, the good cholesterol up, and was easy on digestion. So that's why the Mediterranean diet is preferred, and that's a good place for people to start. Now, from there, then you can transcend that to a more, let's say, a more powerful diet. But for most people, that's what I'd suggest. Have you ever noticed when people have any disease that could kill them and certainly impair the quality of their life, have you ever noticed that they end up depressed? Well, the bad news is if you have diabetes, which it is a virtual pandemic in the United States, you're looking at between 25 to 30 million people diagnosed with diabetes. You're looking at 50 million people who are undiagnosed or have prediabetes, but they're on their way there. So that would make it, aside from obesity, that would make it the number one killing disease in the United States, killing more than either cancer or heart disease each year. Here's the kicker. There is now an association between depression and diabetes and heart disease. For example, women with depression and diabetes, you're more likely to die of a heart attack. And this was a 6-year study done at the Harvard School of Public Health. A big increase, 44% increase in the risk of death if you have diabetes and depression. They studied 78,000 women in the Nurses' Health Study for this. So, three things you can do. The same identical protocol that would help a person with diabetes also helps a person with heart disease and also a person with depression. No inflammation, no coffee. I'm going to do a whole report on coffee next week because a lot of people think because the coffee bean is so rich in caffeic acid and other antioxidants that it's good. Yeah, if you had just the coffee bean and the extract of the coffee bean, that's one thing. But when you brew that, A, you destroy the antioxidants. And B, here's some of the things that can happen. Do you know that by drinking a cup of coffee a day, you're more likely to lose your teeth and because the bone in your jaw is demineralized with the high acidity of caffeine? That's just one thing. So losing your teeth, you're more likely to have fibrocystic breast. You're more likely to have ovarian cyst. Far more likely to have gastric reflux and all forms of malabsorption in the intestine. Just from coffee. So the fact so many people drink it doesn't mean that it's right or we should do that. A new study as published in the London School of Medicine in Science Daily shows that vitamin D really accelerates recovery from tuberculosis. Anyone going to a country like Africa or India that has tuberculosis, especially anyone going to Haiti to do work down there, take your vitamin D because it can help others who have tuberculosis. Exercise can lower the risk of death for men with prostate cancer. This is a major study from Harvard School of Public Health and published in Science Daily. A lot of men have prostate cancer. Well, this is where over the age of 40, every man should be exercising, unless there's some reason they can't, 5 days a week for 1 hour aerobic and a half hour resistance every single day. And that can help prevent prostate cancer to begin with, but if you should have prostate cancer, it can help save you from dying. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to begin taking your calls now at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. On tomorrow evening's Progressive Commentary Hour, I'm going to give you the latest information about why we should be closing down our nuclear plants. I'll give you the newest information on what's happening in Fukushima and why it's really getting bad there, though most people, because it's not in the news cycle, thought that it was all over. It is not. And how we could be having all kinds of Fukushima here in the United States. A whole hour with some of the leading people on the real dangers of radiation. So that's a program that's going to be very important for you. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you, I'm Gary Knoll. For the past 3 or 4 days, we've had trouble with our server, the company that we pay to service our library, our archives, and it was down for about 3 or 4 days. So if you were trying to download some programs and you couldn't sign on, you know why, and hopefully it'll all be up and all those other shows that you missed will be back online as of tomorrow. Now, everyone likes something that's sweet. That's not a problem. It's the type of sweetener you have and what it does inside the body. We're going to do a little classroom on the air now, a little extended insight into diabetes. I'm very concerned about diabetes. I'm extremely concerned about diabetes in minority groups because in the African American and Latino population, it is quickly becoming virtually the number one killer. Because when you have diabetes, you're more likely to have a heart attack or stroke or cancer. Diabetes also does something that most people are not aware of. It ages you faster. In fact, just normal levels of diabetes is enough to knock 8 years off your lifespan. So let's say the average lifespan for an African-American or a Latino male right now is about 66. Well, now you're looking at 58. That is not a good sign. So what can we do? The mechanisms behind the accelerated destruction of cells and tissue and organs observed in diabetes is called glycation. Now, that's the very, very bad situation where you have a binding of sugars and to proteins. and the resulting sugar protein complex is known as an advanced glycation end product, or age. I've said this many times, I'll just do it again so you get to visualize what glycation is. And the damage inflicted by glycation is almost always irreversible. And glycation really speeds up the aging. Just imagine that you're having a piece of toast. The browning of the toast, that's glycation. The crust on a piece of bread, that's glycation. Making a bagel, that's all glycation. A potato chip, all glycation. French fries, glycation. So anytime you have any carbohydrate that is turned into a crispy structure, that process is glycation. And healthy proteins also turn brown the presence of excess glucose and become functionally impaired. So let's just say that you're having, if you're the average American, you're having a hamburger. The heat that it takes to cook that hamburger creates glycation. Now when you eat that hamburger on a bun, now you have the sugar and the protein together. And when that goes in the body, it plays all kinds of havoc. Scientists have confirmed that this destructive process can also occur in healthy individuals when blood glucose levels are sustained above 85 milligrams per deciliter. And when you have a big meal, what we call a heavy meal, it almost always goes up, your blood sugar. Last evening, I was sitting editing a manuscript, and I was flicking across the dials in cable to see what they were covering. And there was this food show where this guy goes around the United States, and it's very popular, and he eats humongous amounts of food. It's a challenge, like he'll eat the biggest pizza ever, or the biggest hamburger, like 6 pounds. And as I'm watching him eat this with the sausage and 12 eggs and cheese, 6 pounds. First of all, there's no stomach in a human being that was meant to hold 6 pounds. It's stretching it beyond what is normal or healthy. But also, if you were to take a picture of that person's blood afterwards, you would see that it goes from red to creamy. And that creaminess are streaks of fat. And that streaks of fat are allowing clumping of red blood cells. That's called aggregation, and that can lead to a clot. What's amazing is this guy hasn't had a heart attack or stroke yet. Will he? I would bet anything that this man is on his way to dead. Absolutely going to die. There's no question. It's just when. Now, the key is, if he dies on television eating a hamburger, that'll become called the Death Burger, and that'll be a bestseller. And the place that has it will have a picture of him, you know, with vomit out of one side of his mouth, blood out of his ears, you know, his eyes exploded out on the wall, and saying he died here, and everybody will line up to buy that burger. That's how sick we are as a country. Man, he must have to... I'll bet he doesn't have a normal toilet. He has a septic system. He carries it with him each day, because when you're eating 6 pounds, it's got to come out. Man, is that bad. Anyhow, that's a very popular show. But then all the, like, there's the, I couldn't believe it. Following that was to be a show by this guy who runs around the country eating a strange thing around the world. And it was roadkill. Well, that's great. What do we want to have today? Well, let's go out to Route 45 and see what's been killed, and that's what we'll have. You see, once you start down a path, you can't turn around because the people are with you. The mistake that all celebrities make, minor or major celebrities, is that they misconstrue the interest people have in their career. And more often than not, people are watching because you're so extreme in what you're doing. You're like the person that's going to drive a car at 150 miles an hour and then put a blindfold on. They're just waiting for all this to implode. Well, needless to say, you bet if you took his blood sugar, it's going to be off the charts. Now, fortunately, a relatively simple vitamin called vitamin B1, but a form of vitamin B1, it is, I'll spell it for you, ben, B-E-N, F-O-T-I, amine, benfotiamine, protects the cells to prevent glycation and the accelerated aging triggered by elevated sugar levels. And it used to be a prescription drug, but now it's available just as low cost as an inexpensive supplement. There's lots of research showing that you lower your risk of heart disease, stroke, kidney damage, and vision loss by neutralizing the impact of excess glucose and subsequent glycation when you have benfenamine in your system. Now, my suggestion is just take this prior to going to a meal. Or if you should forget, have it afterwards. And just think of how many times people want to have something well done. When you have something well done, you're aging the process. Browning reactions explains many age-related conditions like cataracts of the eye, atherosclerosis and kidney disease, neurological deterioration, stiffening of the connective tissues and joints. Scientists found similar damage from advanced glycation end products in kidneys and arterial tissue in even young diabetics. So what you have is you have massive inflammation. That's what happens. It triggers a massive inflammation in the body. So here's how this simple thing works. Blood vessels are lined by a thin layer of cells called the endothelium, which constantly regulates blood pressure and flow. And damage to the endothelium, which occurs in response to having a hamburger, a hot dog, and french fries and pizza, is an important first step in producing heart attacks, failure, and stroke. So all the things that you see that people are getting sick from and dying from, this is all part of this. So the body produces toxic alcohol-like compounds called polyols during the period of high blood sugar. And polyols, polyols, disrupt endothelial cardiovascular cell function. Well, benfenamine reduces production of the polyols, accelerates the rate of glucose breakdown, and reduces free glucose levels within the cell. So hence, it protects you. So you're going to get your blood sugar down, you're going to protect your cells, and you're not going to end up as prematurely aged as if you didn't have it. All right? So just remember, there's a positive solution to a lot of that problems. I'm Gary Nall, and we're here to talk about the issues that make a difference in our life. We're talking about health, and I was just mentioning cataracts. In a moment, I'm going to give you some of the latest on how to have eye care that's healthier longer. But I'm going to open my lines up now for your calls on any topic that we discuss or have discussed or any of the issues you'd like to talk about or share. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Back with your calls in a moment. Just informed that we had a little glitch in our telephone system. Sorry if you tried to call and couldn't get through. So we're going to try again and reboot the whole system. So you should be able to call in about 60 seconds from now at 888-874-4888. This was an email that I got this afternoon. Dear Gary, is it true that we could make safer nuclear power plants if we shifted over from using plutonium to a less dangerous fission material? The answer is yes and no. Yes, we could use thorium, T-H-O-R-I-U-M. It generates less radioactive waste It is less dangerous than fission during using uranium, but it still produces nuclear waste and constitutes a danger and is no substitute for what is really needed and is attainable. I believe that we should have a full implementation of safe, clean, renewable energy technologies. I would start with solar, then go to a wave, because we have unlimited amounts of energy from waves, even in rivers, but also in the oceans. And then geothermal. You never hear people talking about geothermal, but look at Iceland as an example. Iceland has geothermal, and as a result, they run that geothermal under their streets and highways and into their homes, so they have all this free heat. We have massive amounts of geothermal. Thousands upon thousands, tens of thousands of geothermal springs. Now, wind is a little more problematic. Let me explain why. I had down in my Texas ranch, for those of you who visited there, you saw out in the field, you saw a windmill. And the windmill, if you went to the base of it, it powered a simple pump, and that pump brought water up from a well. It was no big deal. And I had one windmill for a 50-acre field, and it was enough to supply water for irrigation of the land and for water for the animals out there. That's kind of romantic. Now you go to Holland, and you see these spectacularly beautiful and historically important windmills. Again, if you went into some of the older ones, you would find that not only did it create wind, then it creates a crank motion, much like a clock, but they also would have water that was brought up, and then they also use it for churning, and they could have a grist mill where they have a stone, two stones, and put grain in between, and then that ground it into a flour so they could use it. So it has multiple uses. So when people originally thought, well, wouldn't it be nice to have some windmills, they didn't realize, especially in the United States, what they really look like. And then you go upstate, and what you see are 400-foot-high, mammoth structures that are noisy. You can hear them. They go, whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. That's what they sound like, this whooshing noise. 24/7 forever. And if you're within 3 miles of them, you're going to hear it. And they're a blight because they don't just put one up. They'll put dozens in the same place up. And one pod of windmills might take up as much as 10,000 acres. And because they were offering the communities a small amount of money, it ends up being about 1%. And these are major players. Goldman Sachs is behind these. The major people, because they're keeping 98 cents on the dollar that they make. And they don't generate that much electricity, but they do generate a lot of problems. And then when it's on your land, they might lease the land for $50, $100, $500. So people think, okay, well, if I'm getting three or four of these, you know, it's an extra $300 or $400 a month. But then their property's non-saleable. Once one of these windmills on your property, you'll never be able to sell your property. So now there are communities, there are towns in New York State that are actually voting, and the courts have upheld their right to say no to wind power like this. But there are countries like in Denmark and in Scotland that are using the same windmill but in the ocean further out, where it's neither a visual blight nor is it a noise polluter, but it's generating electricity for 300,000 or 400,000 people. Well, in these smaller coastal communities, that could be a whole area that, whose electricity is taken care of. And where the initial cost requires spending a lot of money, it's about $2 million for each one of these. The initial cost of electricity is actually going to be higher. That's why the best source is wave. It's the least expensive, and then next would be solar. Now, with solar, once again, you're going to have a problem. If you go into the desert, if you go into the Mojave Desert and some of the large deserts in the western United States, we have enough land that is not near human settlements and homes of no type, that initially they have to come in and they have to scrape the land down. That will cause dislocation of some species of cactus and tortoises. Those can be relocated. But we could run, if we did it in California, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, we could run solar to a degree that we could have one-third of all the people in the United States on solar, because we also have Florida on the other side. And again, I'm not talking about in heavily populated areas, so you could have whole solar farms. Now, the good news is, when I solarize my home, I have a 100% solar home. If you look at my home, the meter goes in reverse. That's a good thing. In spite of that, I still have a backup generator. I have a backup storage tanks where I could go a year if the solar failed and if there's no electricity. I'll go into what other people can do with you in your home as well to protect yourself from any future blackouts. But in any case, the initial costs were rather high because no one was doing solar. No one. The power utilities had a monopoly on it. Well, there was enough lobbying and enough outcry that finally the state forced the issue so that solar companies could come in. Well, the initial ones are always more expensive, but now the Germans and the Chinese have so perfected bringing down the size of these solar panels, making them far more capable of holding more electricity, that they're one-fifth the size they were just 5 years ago. So it's just like a cell phone. They're getting thinner with more information. Solar is getting smaller. And now they also have the solar paint. Now this is the next made. You can literally paint your house. And these particles, these solar receptors on your house can literally run your house. That's where we're at now, and the technology is moving very fast. So I would go wave, geothermal, solar, and only in those areas of the United States where it is not adverse to the local community, to value of property, to sound pollution or noise pollution, you could put wind turbines. But then I wouldn't allow them all of the benefits and tax write-offs they currently have. So that's that. Now let's go over and say hello to Peter from Pennsylvania. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Gary. How are you?
Great.
Great. I have been looking at going to graduate school, second career. I'm 60. I'm in stellar health. Been following your protocol for a number of years. And I wanted to become originally a holistic physician. We had that conversation, and I talked to other people, and so that's out. So I decided to become a certified clinical nutritionist. And in looking at a lot of the graduate schools for a master's and a doctoral work, I noticed that most of it is based in the traditional Western system. Do you have any suggestions?
A lot has to do with what happens in the next 12 months. I would not commit myself to anything in the next 12 months. First, the ALEC group, and you're familiar with ALEC, and it's a group of hundreds of corporations that have worked together to meet on a regular basis with state legislators in all 50 states, give them laws that they want to see enacted, give them changes in the laws that now exist that benefit ALEC members. For example, right now in New Jersey, they want to make it mandatory that every healthcare practitioner that works in any institution has to have the flu vaccine and the H1N1 vaccine. And how did that happen? That's ALEC. Anytime you see mandatory vaccine with Gardasil, that's ALEC. But there's no science behind it. Now, we're doing a major documentary and that asks the questions, are vaccines safe or effective? I have 31 scientists, physicians, professors, immunologists thus far filmed. I'm almost done with it. And thus far, I can tell you, not a single person I have filmed can show me a single article in the scientific literature that is a gold standard. It shows that a given vaccine or combination of vaccine would be safe for a given person. Even questions such as, will a vaccine impart immunity for life to the person who's being vaccinated? The answer is, no one knows, because there's never been a study to prove it. but there's been a lot of studies that show that the vaccine's stimulation of the immunity does not create protective antibodies. Hence, a lot of the people that have been vaccinated have come down with the very disease they've been vaccinated for. Now, on tomorrow's noon show, I'll be playing a four-minute clip from Bill Moyers, who went after those people in the field who challenged the safety and efficacy of vaccines. I have a lot of respect for Bill Moyers. I think he's done a tremendous amount of good on this particular issue. I will share a different point of view. I will do so politely, but I will show the actual evidence that what he is suggesting is wrong. But we have scholarship behind us. And on this case, he has his opinion, not scholarship. On other areas, he uses scholarship to eviscerate the opposition's arguments. But this is not uncommon for people who hold a particularly liberal perspective. They believe that the more medications we're given, supposedly for miracle treatments, the better it is. You've seen almost no hesitation to promote things such as teen screen or to promote mental health screening for all Americans or to promote vaccination or to promote research for an AIDS vaccine. Yeah, that's great. Can you imagine every American getting vaccinated with the AIDS virus in order to protect them when there is no proof that any of these things work to begin with, but you just contaminated a whole country? So it's just based upon belief, but not science. In any case, behind all this, behind all of our public health measures are special interest groups, people who benefit when the public does not have a real understanding of the issue. Now they're back. They're back around the United States, including New York State, insisting that the only person allowed to offer nutrition, diet advice, counseling, must be a dietitian slash nutritionist. That means that since I have a baccalaureate in Bachelor of Science in Nutrition, and I have a PhD in human nutrition and public health science, I would not be qualified under this new law to be able to counsel people. Now, fortunately, I became a dietitian, a registered dietitian, and hence I am a dietitian slash nutritionist, so I can, it won't impact me. But think of all the people out there who've gotten their nutrition degrees but didn't get their dietitian degree. They would be excluded. Now, if you look at most dietitians, the ones I know are very unhealthy. I only know a couple who actually practice holistic health. And dietitians in 1 year caused the death of 52,000 Americans just from the food they fed them. But no one takes responsibility for that. So before you do anything in any career, all those of you who have your master's degree in clinical nutrition, if this passes in New York State, it'll be implemented in every state in the United States, and you're out of business. Then you would have to go back to school. You would have to take a whole new course in dietetics. That's about 3 years. Then you'd have to take like 900 or 1,600 hours of working in a clinical setting. You're talking about years of work. No one's going to do that. So we're beginning a major effort in New York State in the next 2 weeks to challenge this. If we don't challenge it, it'll become the law. And then, unless you were a dietitian first, being a nutritionist, you wouldn't be able to practice anywhere. It'd be against law. So that's why I'm asking you, don't do anything at this time. All right? We want to wait to see how we're able to argue our case and show that anyone who graduates from an accredited school with a background in clinical nutrition should have the right to practice nutrition, and it shouldn't be an exclusive monopoly of the dietitians. And that's because who's behind the dietitians? Alec. Because you're not going to have dietitians telling you to be healthy. They don't know how. They're the most unqualified, undereducated group I've ever met. They don't know diddly squat about health. Nothing. Just absolutely nothing. But they had the power of monopoly. And once you have a monopoly, then you don't have freedom of choice. And that's the road they're going down. Thank you for your call. I'm Gary Knoll. I mentioned earlier I wanted to give a little information about protecting your eyes. I'm going to do that now. Those of you who'd like to call in, please do so. I'll take some additional calls in a moment at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Your eye is a highly complex organ, and you really have to think of your eyes as an organ. And you have to remember your eye, your eye has to have the right nutrients to it. Light enters the anterior portion of the eye through the clear cornea and the fluid-like aqueous humor, and is then focused by the clear lens before entering the gel-like vitreous. It must pass through a nerve layer of ganglions connected to photoreceptors, both rods and cones, where light signals are converted to electrical signals that are transported to the brain. And behind the photoreceptors are the nursemaids called the retinal pigmented epithelial cells that feed and remove toxic waste from the constantly active photoreceptors. The retinal pigmented epithelium cells rest on a thin connective tissue-like support structure called Bruch's membrane, which also serves to create a blood-brain barrier for transport of nutrients and waste products. Just understanding a little bit about the eye is important. So what can we do? Do you ever notice when people smoke, they kind of squint? And when people smoke, their eyes are bloodshot. People drink, their eyes are bloodshot. That's because alcohol is a vasoconstrictor. It limits the amount of oxygen and nutrients that can get into the eye. And that causes massive free radical damage. It's inevitable it's going to lead to cataracts and macular degeneration. So not smoking and not drinking is good. Not eating foods that are highly processed, that's good. But then there's some things you can do that really make a difference. Of the 20 or so carotenoids detected in our blood, only two are used selectively by the eyes. One is spelled Zea, Z-E-A, axanthin, X-A-N-T-H-I-N. And the other is lutein, L-U-T-E-I-N. Now, these two nutrients are found in almost all subsections of the eye, but occur in concentrations nearly 1,000 times greater in the macula section of the retina than in any other tissue in the body. This extremely high concentration creates a yellow spot that is visible to the trained professional and is called the macula lutea. And this gives the macula its striking color, also often referred to as the macula pigments. And we should have these in our body. The average person doesn't get these at all, and that's a big mistake because your body could really benefit from them. Now, here's what they do, very simply. You want to protect the lens and the macula. You got to protect your macula. The high specific concentrations of these two nutrients in the macula gave scientists their first hint that nature had a purpose for their plant pigments in the eye health, like yellows and reds and purples, plums and peppers. All that is good for you. But I believe that we should be taking these in supplemental form because we can get a whole lot more and it's concentrated and you're getting the right amount every single time. And here's what I would take. I would take 10 milligrams and 10 milligrams. It's that simple. All right? And that could help protect your eye from degeneration and get your vision back in many cases where otherwise it would be substantially diminished. By the way, which corporation was voted the most evil corporation of the year by the Natural News readers poll? Let's see if someone can get it. All right? If you can tell us which corporation of all the corporations in the world was voted the most evil corporation of the year by Natural News readers, call 888-874-4888. I'll tell you the answer if nobody gets it right before we end our program today. Now, I mentioned earlier in the show, I'd like to help people not have a catastrophic event. And most of the time, if someone's over the age of, oh, let's say 50, and you ask them, what causes people to die who take extraordinary steps to remain healthy? Our response is that in many cases, there is one precipitating catastrophic event that ignites a cascade of degenerative changes that culminate in death. For example, in an otherwise fit elderly person who sustains a bone fracture, the combination of trauma, systemic inflammation, loss of mobility, hospital confinement, and psychological stress can result in several diseases emerging that conspire to kill the victim in a relatively short time. And catastrophic events are by no means limited to accidents. Surgical trauma, or the impact of temporary loss of blood flow, can also ignite it. But there's one I'm going to talk specifically about and how to prevent it. It's called aortic stenosis. This is a catastrophic event that strikes older individuals, but it can be thwarted by a supplement that was introduced just about 13 years ago. Now, there is a provocative evidence that what members already of this audience already do to protect against atherosclerosis and bone loss also prevents calcification of the aortic valves. And let me just explain this in a little deeper. Blood exits the heart to nourish the body from the left ventricle, which each heartbeat, you hear it, boom, boom, that aortic valve opens to let blood out and closes to enable the left ventricle to fill with fresh oxygenated blood from the lungs. In aortic stenosis, the aortic valve narrows and does not open fully. The result is the left heart ventricle enlarges as it desperately tries to force blood out through the constricted aortic valve. If not treated surgically, the aortic valve may either constrict so tightly that blood cannot exit the heart, or congestive heart failure may set in as the left ventricle deteriorates in response to having to squeeze harder to push blood through the narrowed aortic valve. And so what can be done? All right. And then you end up with this aortic sclerosis. It's considered a precursor for eventual constriction and obstruction of the blood flow out of the heart. And that is ultimately diagnosed as aortic stenosis. And most of those with aortic sclerosis succumb to another disease before frank stenosis manifests. Historically, most cases of aortic stenosis were thought to result from the wear and tear of aging. That's not the case now. So what can we do? Well, there's a couple things we can do, and one of them is vitamin K. And vitamin K is very important, especially if you're getting all the different types of K, like K2. And it has been tested in people and has had a 57% reduction in the risk of dying from cardiovascular disease compared with those with the lowest intake. And in the group with the highest vitamin K2 intake, the risk of severe aortic calcification dropped by over 50%. So that's good news. So one single nutrient could make a difference in preventing major catastrophic factors. It's not the only thing, but it sure is the one I would suggest at the top of that list. Okay, all the lines are packed, every single one now. Let's just go through. People want to guess this. I'm going to run real quick down the... Let's start with Patricia from New York. Patricia.
Monsanto.
You're right.
Oh, I could win $1 million, huh?
Charles from New York, did you have it right?
So yes, I said the same thing.
All right, and Russ from NIAC, did you have it right?
Get a free case of genetically modified soybeans.
Well, that's a good idea. Why didn't I think of that? Thank you, Russ, and also Patricia and Charles. Let me read this in closing here, and this is from Mike Adams. After taking nominations for the most evil corporation of the year, over 16,000 readers voted online. An astonishing 51% of all votes went to Monsanto as the most evil corporation of the year. But right behind them, the second place was the Federal Reserve, and then British Petroleum, Halliburton, McDonald's, Pfizer, Merck, Walmart, Nestle's, and that rounds it out. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen today and look forward to sharing more on the next program.